The Office of War Information presents its director, Elmer Davis, in another of a series of weekly war reviews. These reports are designed for the American people at home and for America's fighting forces overseas. Each week, Mr. Davis will review the news and discuss issues of direct importance to the prosecution of the war. Mr. Davis.
This has been a glorious week, but as Winston Churchill reminded us, broadcasting from the White House this afternoon, this is not the end. The destruction of the enemy's army in Africa has been complete, but much larger enemy armies will have to be destroyed in Europe and in Asia before the war is won. Some of the plans for these operations have long been laid. Others are being made in Washington now in the conferences of British and American military and naval leaders. Some of these operations must cover great distances. We have a reminder of that in the news that our Army and Navy have begun the reconquest of Attu, the westernmost of the Aleutian Islands. Attu is where the weather comes from, the foul Aleutian weather which has given our forces more trouble than the Japanese. With Attu in our hands, the recovery of Kiska will be a good deal easier, for then the weather, which has so far given the enemy an advantage, will be on our side. Attu is the westernmost piece of American territory except for Wake and Guam. It's nearer to Tokyo than to Juneau in southeast Alaska, but it's still something over 1,600 miles from Tokyo. We have quite a lot of ground to cover, east and west, before this war is won. As for the victory in Africa, it was perhaps less important to the total conduct of the war than were the three decisive battles of last year: Midway, Stalingrad, and El Alamein. For if our side had lost any one of those three battles, the road to victory would have been far longer and more difficult. But the African victory was nonetheless of great importance, not only in itself, but in the way it happened. When I talked a week ago tonight, Bizerta and Tunis had fallen, but we did not know that the enemy might not get away into the Cape Bon Peninsula and hold out there quite a while. Well, he never did. His retreating forces were blasted from the air and sliced to pieces by tank columns striking this way and that. In short, the Germans were getting back exactly what they had given to the Poles, the Dutch, the Belgians, and the French, and they couldn't take it. Berlin newspaper headlines this week talked about their troops fighting to the last cartridge. All the Berlin papers used that phrase, so you can be sure it's the one Dr. Goebbels told them to use. But in fact, they seem to have had plenty of ammunition left when they surrendered. They seem to have had plenty of everything left except one thing. What the Russians had when they held on at Stalingrad, what our Marines had in the early days at Guadalcanal, when they didn't know whether supplies or reinforcements would ever reach them, what the British had in the summer of 1940 when they stood alone. This is the great lesson of the Tunisian campaign: that the master race can't take it, that they quit cold when they once decide they are licked. They were licked all right, but some of them had got away into the hills, and if they really had held out till the last cartridge, they could have caused a good deal of annoyance. But they came in to surrender, came in long, unguarded columns, apparently feeling no worse about it than a ball club that has lost the game and is on its way to the clubhouse showers. Those were almost jolly pictures that some of the correspondents painted of the Nazis surrendering in good-humored resignation. But it's a little hard to feel jolly about that on May 14th. For today is the third anniversary of an incident that shows how the Nazis behave when they can get away with it: the Great Massacre at Rotterdam. The Germans had demanded the surrender of that city with an ultimatum that gave the Dutch a 3-hour deadline. But almost at the same moment that the ultimatum was delivered, while negotiations for surrender were going on, almost 3 hours before the ultimatum expired, German planes came down and bombed the city anyway. The Dutch Air Force had been swept from the skies. The city was surrendering. No resistance could be offered. So the German air squadrons flew over Rotterdam at their leisure, blasted a square mile of it off the map, and blew to pieces or burned to death thousands of people. Afterward, the Germans said they'd got their signals crossed. But they told the Dutch that day that unless their whole army surrendered, other Dutch cities would meet the same fate. Which makes it pretty clear that this massacre of a defenseless city that was surrendering was an act of deliberate policy, the policy of frightfulness pursued for German advantage. I mention this because today happens to be the anniversary, but things just as bad, if on a smaller scale, have been done and are still being done in every one of the occupied countries of Europe. In Norway, where German children who had been fed back into good health after the last war came back as grown men to butcher the people who had taken them in. In Czechoslovakia, where the great massacre of university students in the fall of 1939 was only the beginning of a systematic slaughter of everyone who failed to show proper appreciation of the master race. In Poland, where the butcheries almost seemed to aim at the destruction of a whole nation. In Greece, where well-fed German soldiers watch women and children starving to death. In every country that the Nazis have overrun, murder and torture and starvation have become the normal way of life. So when you remember how they act when they can get away with it, you may find it a little hard to be too much impressed with these columns of Germans coming down from the hills to surrender, as cheerful as a man who thinks his lawyer has arranged for his bail. For maybe some of them are hoping for something very much like that, hoping that their politicians and their propagandists will somehow be able to chisel their way out to a compromise peace, a negotiated peace that will leave the Germans with most of their plunder. This last week has proved that the master race will quit when it concludes that it is licked. And someday that will happen in Germany itself, as it did in the last war, when the national morale of the Germans collapsed as soon as they realized that they couldn't win. That won't happen until they have taken some more lickings, and lickings in Europe, not in Africa. But when it does begin to happen, there are smart men in Germany who will see it beginning long before any outsider can be sure of it. And when they see it beginning, those smart men will begin to twist and turn and try to find any way out that will save their own hides. For they know, the leaders of the Nazi government and the military and industrial leaders who have supported them, they know that they would be unlikely to survive disaster. All of the Nazi leaders, many of the military men, have been involved in those crimes against the non-combatant populations of the occupied countries which the Allied governments have sworn to punish. And those who escaped that punishment might not escape the fury of the German people against a gang that promised them the world and brought them to ruin. So those men at the top in Germany can be counted on to do anything they can to get out as cheaply as they can. First, they will try, as they are trying now, every trick of propaganda to divide the United Nations, playing on jealousies and suspicions wherever they can find them, between nations or inside of nations, trying anything that might cause friction and slow down the Allied war effort. And you can also count on them to do everything they can to persuade the Allied peoples eventually that there is a new Germany, a safe Germany, that it would be safe for us to call off the war and save lives on some other arrangement than unconditional surrender and complete German defeat. The Japs will do that too, no doubt, when the time comes. But from present indications, the Germans will be driven to it first, even if not too soon. No insurance man would give very much for Adolf Hitler's chances of surviving till the end of the war. For Hitler has become a symbol of a gang that includes a great many men besides Hitler. And the men around him have no more scruples than he has. They'd just as soon cut his throat as not, if they thought that by getting rid of Hitler they could save their own skins. They've not got to that point yet, but they're spreading the story in Germany that the smart men at the top will be able to fix up a compromise peace with America and England so that all of German resources can be turned to the attack on Russia. And they've been trying to spread the story over here that they can fix up a compromise peace with Russia, which will leave them free to turn on us. The point of that story, of course, is that if we don't want them to make peace with Russia, we had better make peace with them first. Well, so far, they fooled nobody of consequence in any country, but you can count on them to keep on trying. And meanwhile, there will be peace feelers from the satellite countries that are tails to Hitler's kite. There will be peace talk from neutral countries that want peace for reasons of their own. We heard some of that sort of talk this week from General Franco, the Spanish dictator. Last summer, General Franco said that the liberal world is going down, the victim of its own errors. And when he said the liberal world, he meant our world, the world of democracy and freedom. He was sure then, or said he was, that the Axis was going to win. But 2 days after the fall of Tunis and Bizerta, while the remnants of the German army in Africa were being mopped up, why then, General Franco suddenly discovered that neither side could win, so we might as well make peace now. Well, there are good reasons why General Franco should want to compromise peace now in the interests of his own government. But whether this speech was his own idea or whether it reflected the ideas of others, it made no impression in Washington, where it was merely remarked that America, Britain, and Russia are all determined to compel the enemy to unconditional surrender. Now, unconditional surrender would mean ruin for all the leaders of the German government and for all their subordinates who have cheerfully tortured and murdered the helpless populations of the occupied countries. For as President Roosevelt said last October, the ringleaders in these innumerable acts of savagery and their brutal henchmen must be named and apprehended and tried in accordance with the judicial processes of criminal law. And that goes for the Japs, too, and for such Italians as have participated in those crimes. Count on those men to do anything they can think of to wriggle out of it. When they begin to see that they are licked, none of them would hesitate to double-cross the others if he thought he could figure a way out for himself. We may see eventually what will profess to be a revolution in the Nazi Party, or a revolt of the army against all the Nazis, or some combination of generals and businessmen, perhaps with some respectable nonentity for a front, anything to escape the retribution that will otherwise fall on them. Now, those twistings and wrigglings and maneuverings are not likely to fool anybody in a country which has known the presence of the German armies. Nor are they likely to fool many people in England, where 50,000 men, women, and children have been killed by Nazi air raids. But the recent tendency of German propaganda indicates that they may hope to fool some people here. We are a long way off. We have not felt or seen the war in our own country. We would all, naturally, like to win victory with as little loss of American life as possible. So apparently the German leaders hoped that they might fool us into mistaking for victory something that would not really be victory at all. Something that would leave the Germans with most of their plunder. Something that would only be the beginning of another truce, which this time might not last even so long as 20 years. It was in full knowledge of that, knowledge that you cannot trust any of the men who have any position of importance at all in Germany, knowledge that there will be no real victory until German military power is broken utterly, it was in knowledge of that fact that Allied statesmen declared the Casablanca Doctrine, no terms for the enemy except unconditional surrender. Someday, not soon, but someday, the whole master race will do what its African army did, decide that it's licked and quit. When that time comes, the Allied governments have promised that there will be no mass reprisals against the innocent. But men who have burned and butchered, even under orders, don't look innocent to their victims.